This podcast this time will be about Aung San Suu Kyi of Burma. I speak of it in such a way that it's a great disappointment to the human rights movement in general, and in particular to those of us in the United States who worked on her case. We did work hard and we did produce a great campaign for her, and to many and most and maybe all, she's been a failure at human rights, and especially in the Rohingya, the Muslim issues of Burma. She's failed us completely, the world. On the other hand, I still believe that our efforts to place her in the government from under house arrest really came from the opportunity to create a civilian government, and it is still a civilian government. And I would make the argument that a civilian government is less dangerous than a military government, because the military itself has been fighting ethnic divisions up and down the east and west border of Burma for a very long time, with thousands of deaths, thousands of rapes, villages torn apart and destroyed. So the history of the nationalism within the Burman majority, of which Aung San Suu Kyi belongs, is a severe high nationalism, perhaps even fascism within. It includes the monks in support of the basic driving out of the Rohingya people out of Burma, who have been there for centuries. And so, in a sense, in speaking to this, I want to give a background to the campaign that maybe they could help get her there. We were among the many. I met Michael Aris, her husband, about 1992 or 93. Nice man, professor at Oxford University, very devoted. He later died of cancer, and Aung San Suu Kyi could have went to the funeral, chose not to, because if she did, she had no guarantee that she could get back into Burma, and that was her decision. As the campaign sort of took flight, a lot was done at American University, and the kids there did a great job of getting arrested in the streets there, and that kind of set a spark up. And I kind of came into it. I spoke to my partner Farrell Gary, and she said, "Jack, let's go to visit the refugee camps in Burma first, or they're now in Thailand, and let's go see Aung San Suu Kyi herself." And I said, "Well, she's under house arrest." She said, "Well, let's work on that, but let's go before we launch into a major campaign. Let you and me study this as best we can and meet the appropriate people." So that's why I did go over with Ferial in 1999, and we visited the refugee camps in Thailand of the Burmese, and of course the usual squalid, boring places where people have to sit around waiting to go home. Then we went into Burma, to the capital. We flew in and had a wonderful taxi cab driver who showed us so many pagodas I was about to turn Buddhist practically. But in the search for getting to meet with Aung San Suu Kyi, I asked the State Department and a lot of important people how I could do that, and everybody said no one can do that. She's under house arrest. But somehow Ferial was talking to our taxi cab driver, and he said that he knew she gave out rice once in a while to her people, and that she would show up at the NLD headquarters, which is her party's headquarters, in Rangoon. So, as smart as Ferial was, she decided she would put on a sarong and sit in the NLD headquarters till Aung San Suu Kyi got there. And I stayed on the outside of that street, which is opposite a big hotel, pretending I was an antique dealer. But we spent a lot of time waiting. Then one day Aung San Suu Kyi showed up. Ferial asked her if she could bring me in to meet with her, meet with us. And she said yes, and so we got about a half hour with her. And that night they tore our stuff apart out at the airport on our way out, as I knew we had to go. And so we came back to start up a campaign, and we did a pretty darn good one, the U.S. campaign for Burma, with Jeremy Woodrum and Dan Beaton. We set up a lobbying office called U.S. Campaign for Burma. And that was a very effective organization. I worked with the Human Rights Action Center, my center, for many years. We first did 36 videos of celebrities from Hollywood in support. Dan Adler, a good friend of mine, said he'd take that cause up, and he did. He was joined by Prudence Fenton, by June Gutterman, and Natalie Bruss. And that team put together those 36. Will Ferrell came in right away, Judd Apatow, Jim Carrey. So we had the comedic side of things. And once that started rolling, CNN covered it, and it took off from there. We also went to Shep Ferry and asked him to do the iconic image. We said I said to him, you know, Shep, if we really, in order to know the good and the bad of a campaign, you have to know the ruler, the bad person, and the creator, the one who's going to change things, and that's Aung San Suu Kyi. And he did a beautiful poster that became iconic all over the world. We also did a concert in Bangkok, a 9999, September 9th, 1999, in support of Aung San Suu Kyi, along with the visits, continued visits of staff people to the refugee camps. But the history of the Burmese government fighting, the Burman majority, I should say, the power in government, the military, have been fighting the ethnics on both sides of that border for a very long time. And so it needed a lot of support. And one of the things I asked Jim Carrey to do is I told him, Jim, you know, no one's going to learn Aung San Suu Kyi's name in America because Americans don't usually adjust to Asian names. And so he did an actual video that got how to say her name, and he actually did that. And then Will Ferrell kicked it off with Judd Apatow and a whole series of great actors and actresses that gave us an immense support and recognition. But always we were sort of working for a Mandela-type character. You know, you have to understand that we in the human rights movement need these symbols of hope, and we certainly try to create her as one of those symbols of hope. And we worked hard to do that, and we traveled to and from Burma and Thailand, got to know the leadership, knew the exile government. Both Clinton and Bush supported Aung San Suu Kyi. It was one time when the government, our U.S. government, was ahead of the movement in a certain sense. They were always in support of Aung San Suu Kyi at the White House, both Clinton and Bush. And Jeremy and I actually briefed the staff of Laura Bush about the videos we were doing. For those of us who know the history of it, this will be quick. Her father, who was executed as the head of the military, he fought the Japanese and then turned on the British after the war, and he became the founder of the army in Burma. And he was executed, and Aung San Suu Kyi had to run out of the country with her mom, get educated in England. She returned to Burma later to participate as vote, just to vote in the election. And it turned out she won the election, and that's when she was put under house arrest until about 1920 or so. Farrell and I visited her in February of 1999, and we got a half hour with her. We were probably the only two outsiders to see her in those periods. I'm sure diplomats did, or United Nations people did. I think her message was always unity, and we're going to win. And so we would work hard. The U.S. Campaign for Burma was very effective at lobbying on the Hill. They did a very nice job. The disappointment we had after President Obama visited her and congratulated her, along with Secretary Hillary Clinton, was a high point for the Americans, but also for the world. It was a new symbol of hope. And then all of a sudden, a few years later, when she's in power, the power has to be explained a bit. She has 25% military in her parliament, no matter what happens. She's not allowed to rule the country yet because she was married to a white man. And that has to be changed before she actually becomes the de facto leader. And so this complicated constitution we questioned in Congress, and We worked on that, trying to stop it as well. Of course, it didn't stop it. But she is the effective leader de jure, not de jure, but de facto leader of Burma to this day. And so the military start moving against the Rohingya people, the Muslim people in eastern Burma. And they call them Bengalis, so that they get, you know, as if they're from another nation. They want to give them a name so they can. They're stateless people as of yet, and they've not been given their passports, of course. And what really has to happen in Burma for this to be corrected, when they come back into the country and they're welcome back, they should be given passports. That is the solution, simple solution to this problem. I doubt if they'll want to come back in, because the Muslim people know they'll be ill-treated and tortured and killed. So they're not ready to come back after 2 years now, maybe three, of being on the outs. So I'm over my 10-minute hope of explaining this case, but I wanted to lay it out in such a way as there is a disappointment, but still there's a civilian government there today. I'm not cheering for it. It has been ruthless in attacking ethnic minorities on the western border, as well as the Rohingya people, and driving them out of their homeland and not giving them passports. And that would be the simple solution. So Aung San Suu Kyi, you know, and the Nobel people took back their award. Bob Geldof did. I think the Holocaust Museum did as well. But I think in a certain sense, from my point of view, it's still better to have a civilian government. And so in the long run, we did put in a leader who is doing better than what had been there before. And that's not much consolation, but it is consolation. Anyway, this is Jack Healy. Thank you.